Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. I'm here with Len. How
are
you doing?
Very good. How are you, Joey?
Very well, thank you. The price of Bitcoin today, April the 12th, 2021, in U.S. dollars, $59,864.11.
Oh, couldn't get over 60K, so it's in Canadian dollars, we're at 57,195.
We can't hover around this for much longer.
No, it's got to bust very soon.
Amateur charting, coil looking prime for a spring, man. I'm buying more every day, you know, I'm not slowing down my buys.
Keep stacking.
So, I know, I can't. As per commentary and supporting comments and criticisms we've received, we're going to try and keep this to under an hour and a half, but probably under 2 hours. But it'll be a tight 2 hours.
We'll do our best.
A regimented 2 hours. Hit me with the news. What do we got?
All right. We'll start off with very interesting news from the NBA. We have the Sacramento Kings organization will soon give their employees and players the option to get paid in Bitcoin. It's the first major sports franchise to do so. The Kings have already begun selling all their merchandise and tickets. That's dating back from 2014 and in 2019. So they're already on board on the crypto side of things. They're considered one of the more crypto-friendly franchises in pro sports. And this is very interesting. I'm curious to see what your thoughts are, Joey.
Okay, a couple things here. I'm a basketball guy and a sports guy in general. So the first thing I thought about with this and the first thing I thought about with the Russell Okung news, that was probably 2 months ago when Mallers signed him up for half his salary, quote unquote, half his salary in Bitcoin.
They couldn't get Jamario Moon?
He's unavailable. That's a throwback. If you know who Jamario Moon is, fucking tell me on Reddit because I want to hear about your Jamario Moon memories. That the NBA salary cap is an interesting beast. It's not a hard cap, right? So I put some stuff in the show notes and I won't include this in our description, but you can look this up for yourself. The reason this matters is because the Kings are a small market team. And so regardless of whether or not the cap is hard or soft, they have a problem attracting stars. It's been that way probably since the Chris Webber, Doug Christie, Mike Bibby, Peja Stojakovic Kings of the early aughts. And it's interesting when you think about the tax on salaries in the NBA and how it might relate to a Bitcoin salary opt-in from a player. So if you're under $5 million over the salary cap, you get taxed at $1.50 for every dollar. If you're between $5 million and $10 million over, those dollars are taxed at $1.75. 10 to 15, you're taxed at $2.50 for every dollar. And $3.25 for every dollar between 15 and 20, $3.75 for every dollar between 20 and $25 million over the salary cap. There's some other provisions in there. I don't think you can go over the cap two or three years in a row. I think those numbers go up. So you pay more if you're a repeat offender, the repeater tax, I think it's called. If you're the Sacramento Kings and you can convince a star player to come play for you for at least part of your salary in Bitcoin, that's a huge get and a huge opportunity for your franchise. We talked a bit about this, I think, 2 weeks ago with the Oakland A's, right?
We have.
So they're keeping coin on their balance sheet but not paying their players. Is that correct?
So in that case, they were accepting payment for luxury boxes in Bitcoin.
Okay. I don't think that's going to last. I think a lot more sports franchises are going to do this because the leagues are going to be forced to adjust to the reality that this thing may be an appreciating asset and a way for teams to duck around the salary cap. Now, a couple of things to note here. I wonder if we talked about this last week too, the tax implications of such a thing. So for a player to get paid denominated in USD and then converted to Bitcoin.
It's a taxable event.
Exactly. And so why would they want to do that, right? You're putting yourself in a situation where you're going to have to pay additional taxes on your income. I don't think they want to do that. Players in the NBA and other pro sports franchise, other pro sports leagues, they choose teams based on tax jurisdiction. like the Mavericks and the other Texas teams don't pay state tax. Florida doesn't have a state tax. It's like a natural draw for star athletes. That's one piece. Second piece, you mentioned that they're a friendly team for crypto. Vivek Ranadive, although he may not be exactly the best basketball owner, he has a history in tech. You know this. You're nodding your head.
No, and I also am aware that he's not very well liked amongst the community.
No.
He's got a little shady...
The basketball community? No, he's not. Not at all. But he's a guy who's a former tech CEO, sold one of his early startups for quite a bit of money, as I understand it. And so if there was ever going to be a guy who was friendly to
this
that...
This was it.
And he's in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Right? So... My question is, and like you're not a basketball guy, and maybe this is a basketball question, or maybe it's not. The Warriors are forward thinking in a lot of ways when it comes to basketball. They've put, you know, Kerr there as a first time coach, for example, and he had great success. They've done some things with their draft picks and their players and their system that are forward thinking. Why weren't they the first team to do this? Also, their arena, Oracle Arena.
Would've
been a nice story.
Hey, Oracle didn't really help us out a few weeks ago when they didn't buy any Bitcoin, or at least it reportedly they didn't buy any Bitcoin. So that's a ship that sailed.
I like this story. I think that more sports franchises are going to do this.
It's inevitable. This is the first of many that's going to take place.
Pure speculation on my part here, but the Raptors, who have a hard time bringing in talent because, one, the taxes here are ungodly when it comes to the rates on more than $1 million. And two, because they get paid in Canadian currency for the games they play on Canadian soil. So this is an interesting thing for a Canadian sports franchise. You can get paid in a currency, quote unquote currency, an asset that is borderless, knows no master, is arguably, we hope anyways, appreciating. And it's going to be a way to get stars who otherwise wouldn't come play for us.
I was going to suggest perhaps the Miami Heat would be one, because considering the city of Miami is very pro-crypto, the mayor of Miami, Suarez, was actually saying that they want to be known as the capital of crypto and the capital of capital at that. So considering that, perhaps the Heat might be one of the next alternative for one of the next franchises that might start paying their players and employees with Bitcoin.
That's a great T-shirt, the capital of capital.
Capital of capital.
You know that guy responded to somebody on Twitter in a DM?
Suarez?
Yeah, who asked him how he keeps his hair so nice with the humidity so high. And he's like, send me a DM, I'll give you the product list.
He's on the cover of GQ, isn't he?
He could be. He's a handsome guy. He can't be more than 40 years old. He looks pretty young. Great story, that. Immigrant, comes to Miami, forward thinker, no masks, no problems.
It's a great place to live.
Ontario just went into lockdown again today. Or not today specifically, but like recently, and schools now are closed forever and ever. Amen. So
we'll see them.
It's on my mind.
Kids will return back in September. What? So
what's next?
No, I just want to talk a little bit. Actually, to continue on the Sacramento story, they actually created a crypto token for fan awards. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's called King's Token. It's to track the engagement of fans, and it will run on the Ethereum network or the Ethereum side of things. So this is not a one-off. Other franchises have done it. For example, AC Milan has done it with the Milan token or Milan coin. I've seen it on Binance. I laughed when I saw it. So just interesting that they're actually trying to make some crypto just to have their fans engaged. And it's just really interesting how they're going about this.
I'm looking at what I think is King's Token on Etherscan. There's 40 billion tokens held between 2,957 holders with one address, presumably the King's, holding 30 billion tokens. This is almost like XRP. XRP somehow also poorly distributed this way. I'm not a huge fan. Obviously, like, this is a Bitcoin podcast, and I know there's some comments about me dropping the whatever Ether is shit facade.
Remember, we have some listeners that are very pro altcoins and even Ether. I'm not sure if you consider Ether an altcoin or more of a token.
No, it's an altcoin.
But we have fans that are not just 100% Bitcoin, and we should respect that, Joey.
I'll respect it, but whatever. Etherscan has King's Token. Fine, I guess. I don't like the tokens for stuff like this because it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, some of these things I think are pretty frequently and accurately referred to basically like a centralized database, a centralized, you know, when people are really trolling, they call it a spreadsheet. You just have an Excel CS or whatever those files are called. you're tracking these things, it's fine. It's cool, kind of.
It's kind of like when a Dave and Buster's and getting those.
Yeah, you know, like, that. Do I really need a digital wallet for that? I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
Fine. Whatever attracts the fans and makes them happy.
That's right. That's right.
So on to our next story. HSBC will not let clients buy MicroStrategy stock due to their newly changed policy on virtual currencies. So what they're doing, they're allowing their people to sell but not buy. So that's kind of the Robin Hood treatment. And that policy for their virtual currencies has been in place since 2018. Just curious what you have to think about this, Joey.
Okay, I got a lot of comments here. This one had me fired up yesterday when I was looking at it. I actually don't ever drink on Sundays. I don't drink any day except Friday and Saturday as a general rule. That's how you look this good at 33. But yesterday when I saw this story, I started digging in and I bust open a tall can, a Bose something, I don't know, Harvest Lager or something. Good beer. But anyway, this is an interesting thing to me because I look at the story itself and it's about HSBC not allowing virtual currencies on their platform, their trading platform. So a couple things here, okay? One, the story is about MSTR, MicroStrategy. Now, you have to explain to me how MicroStrategy is a virtual currency product. Because as I see it, they're not. They're a database and software company.
I think on their balance sheet, they're...
That's not a digital currency product. And I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
Well, what is the stance on PayPal or Tesla or Square or... is HSBC going to sell the Coinbase IPO? Because I bet you HSBC is going to be cashing in on fees on that coin IPO.
That's a really good point.
For sure they're fucking going to.
Yeah.
So that's one piece. Second piece, because I'm in the market right now looking at homes and whatnot and selling my home and helping friends get acclimated into this whole ecosystem, I know that HSBC was in the news a few months ago for this insane 0.99 five-year variable rate on only the highest risk mortgages. So presumably they're doing this crypto thing because it's risky to their clients, I guess. They're trying to CYA, I don't know, but how... Someone's got to help me understand or like draw the lines between risk and informed consent. Because to me, the mortgage inherently is more risky. You never know what central bank's going to do, certainly not in this country or America. And Bitcoin seems to me to be the more stable of the two investments, at least at the moment. Certainly the companies that I mentioned already, even if you don't like MicroStrategy, there's nothing, you can't say boo about Square, PayPal, Coinbase, Tesla, whatever. He's running a Ponzi scheme. That's my opinion, not financial advice. But all these companies are, I mean, quote unquote, well-respected. And Square and PayPal have been operating long before cryptocurrency was a part of their platform, will operate long after. Now, if you want to get even deeper into this, is Visa allegedly not settling in USDC?
They are.
So what the fuck is that? Are they going to stop people from buying Visa? Does HSBC issue a Visa on their bank?
It seems like they're picking and choosing their arguments here.
It's insane.
It's not a blanket statement. They're just basically finding this, or not picking. This company is just under radar for whatever reason. They're blacklisted. And the customers, their customers, HSBC's customers, are the ones that are going to suffer. How can they give their customers a Robin Hood treatment of only able to sell and not buy the stock? That's brutal.
It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be legal. And I saw there's a few tweets about this, about how Saylor and co. should be looking into this. This has got to be a securities legality issue. I don't know. Again, Canada...
And on the flip side, you have Goldman Sachs over there.
They're doing the opposite.
Right. So I would imagine... So these guys, HSBC, could do their thing, but there's going to be alternatives for people that actually just want to buy MicroStrategy.
Now, tell me this, okay? Is this not a indication that banks are dead or dying across the board?
So I actually have an interesting stat here where it shows that Bitcoin is now worth more than half the entire U.S. banking system by market cap. Bitcoin is worth more than four of the largest banks in the United States combined. So we could see that there is a trend here. The Bitcoin market is worth more and it continually grows, and the U.S. banking system is shrinking in comparison to.
It's intentionally trying to kneecap Bitcoin and crypto.
Good luck.
Good luck. Do you know how much money in fines for various legal activities HSBC has paid since the year 2000?
I wouldn't even have a clue.
$6.5 billion. I pulled
a drop in a bucket for these guys.
$6.5 billion. So including but not limited to financial offenses, competition related offenses, employment related offenses, consumer protection related offenses, government contracting related offenses, toxic securities abuses, banking violations, anti-money laundering deficiencies, mortgage abuses, and what they're qualifying here on this chart as fraud. $6.5 billion.
Yeah, so of that $6.5 billion, I'm wondering how much they've gained out of that. It could have been a $12 billion or 15. So they're on the plus side of this. So even though they paid a small penalty, for us it would be massive. For them, it's probably small. They come out ahead, and it's business as usual for them.
I boil at stories like this.
And that's why you broke your rule and started drinking.
Yeah. I boil because, like, you know, Len, listen, I don't want to like say that we're these sort of wise, financially savvy. We're not. We're just average sort of Bitcoin plebs, equity plebs. But there are people who are a lot worse off than you and me as far as knowledge about the financial system. And this kind of story and stories about TD blocking transfers or BMO blocking transfers or, you know, whatever, right? Pick your poison. It does harm to the people who have the most to gain from exiting that sort of nonsense fiat system. They can't reason through it. They don't have the resources or the community or the Sherpa like we were talking about last week. Someone in their life who can give them the honest truth with sources, and you know they don't have it.
In 2017, I think it was, with the issues you and I were having and our friends mm-hmm. trying to buy in. You know, there was issues with using credit cards to purchase. It was a difficult time. Fortunately, those have been since resolved, but. Yeah, those were some choppy waters, and that was only 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we've come a long way. Perhaps what HSBC is doing here is going to be a one-off.
I hope.
We'll see. I guess only time will tell. And so on to the next one. This is an analysis that was done, and kind of interesting, which is why I want to leave this in one of the lead news items. 53% of all Canadians are on the brink of insolvency. Joey, please take this away because this is a scary number. 53% so is massive.
There's a couple of things I noted about the story, which was in BNN. So as far as like fiat news goes, it's reputable-ish. The thing that I want to take from this before we start is there's another notable stat here. 25% of Canadians are exiting the pandemic with more debt than they came into the pandemic with. Now, that's meant to be a scary stat and a scary story, but there's two people at this table who have more debt now than they did when the pandemic started. Am I right about that?
Yes, I do have more debt.
Me too.
Yes.
On purpose.
Yes.
So is that 25% actually one in four Canadians who are smart enough to, or not one in four, but like of the one in four Canadians, there's some percentage of people in there who are like you and me, who understand that because of the broken interest rate system and CERB and UBI and this unlimited BRRRR, that it's almost incredible to even say it out loud. If you have a home, for example, the asset really is the equity and the loans you can get against the home.
It's a bank machine. It's an ATM.
That's it. And the home is now the liability for you in a way that was never true in the past. And so that number for me is important. It's a very important number. 25% of people have more debt. Of that 25%, I don't know what percentage did it on purpose or is smart about it, but regardless, something to consider, okay? Because I'm not the only person thinking this way. Like I said, I'm maybe more knowledgeable than some, but I am by no means, John D. Rockefeller of Canada.
And before you paint everybody with the same brush, please remember that there's a large segment of the population that are bartenders, yep, servers. They work in food and beverage. They work in factories. So they have been closed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of places that they just have not been able to actually collect a regular paycheck.
Right. That's right.
And so making ends meet, it's been very difficult in the past 12 months or so.
There's been people that took on debt for good reason and in destitute situations. And again, not to get political, but you know these lockdowns, they're destroying a big part of the population. Now let's talk a bit about interest on some of these debts and this 53% insolvency thing. They're defining insolvency as less than $200 away from not being able to pay your monthly bills.
That's a scary number. That's such a low bar.
It is. But let's talk about monthly bills, okay? We talked about this on the Two White Show a while ago because Toronto Star did an article where they did a...
Fantastic piece, by the way.
Thank you. They did a financial breakdown on a man who was an Uber driver and talked about how he couldn't make ends meet.
A man is probably a stretch. It was a boy.
Old. He's 40 years old, that guy.
The guy has no concept in how to spend his money use his money.
Yeah.
You know, when he broke down his monthly expenses, it was disgusting.
I will find it because...
And it didn't add up too. Never mind. Numbers didn't add up.
Because Toronto Star, on its way to becoming a smoldering pile of rubble that once was a media monolith in this country, is looking to call everybody who still pays them for their services stupid in one way or another. Neither here nor there.
But at least just add up the numbers to make sure that they make sense.
I digress. Interest is the lowest it's ever been. Okay. It's not been this low in the entire history of the country, basically since the internet for sure, but even further back than that, the 80s, 90s, we never had rates.
Oh, the 80s were really high. It was,
we never had rates this low. So the other thing, to note there is that if there was ever a time to take on debt, whether it was, because you needed to, or because you were smart and had a good idea or whatever, this is the time to do it. Now, even better, there's, you know, a CTV analyst who was noted in that story, Patty, Patty Lovett Reed, saying interest rates could go up at any time when the economy recovers.
Theoretically.
So she says it's bound to happen because the economic recovery is going so well. Now, this was obviously before this quote-unquote expert who knows absolutely nothing about the current state of affairs. She obviously didn't know that the Libs were planning on pushing UBI through in their...
This could land on their next election platform.
It's going to.
Yeah. Because of the fact that it passed the party policy,
it's going to for sure.
It's a very real possibility.
So this person and the media in general know exactly zero about economics, the financial situation, the political ebbs and flows, it seems like. To put out an article like this and then say that the rates are going to go up and try and scare people when 2 days later the Liberals come out and say UBI is coming, and the Bank of Canada is on the record saying they're not going to raise rates for at least 2 years, which really means at least 4 years. And then by that time, you know, we'll talk about this in a sec, but by that time, you're not going to be able to raise them. Now, let me give you a number here as far as rates and debt.
Go ahead.
In December 2020, the Canadian consumer debt to income ratio was, guess how much?
I wouldn't even have a clue.
1.7.
Okay.
Astronomically high. You will crush most of the country if you raise rates any significant amount. Certainly if you do 2 or 3 rate hikes in a year, people with $400,000 mortgages, $500,000 mortgages, they'll feel it. But people with credit card debt, lines of credit, people with car loans, education.
The home debt, I think that's somewhat manageable. The fact that they've instituted this stress test a little while ago, and now they're going to be increasing the stress test.
I
think these are good measures to ensure that if there are any rate increases, which probably never will happen, that people will be able to absorb that and continue to live their day-to-day lives. But the credit card, that is brutal. Or even, those cash day advance places?
Cash advances, yeah.
Those are criminal. That's
higher than credit cards.
It's astronomically higher than credit cards. And those are, and if people are stuck in that loop, they'll never get out. And the only way to do so is just to declare bankruptcy.
That's right, yeah. That's right. And so the other thing I would note here is that since February 21st, 2020, the TSX is up close to 10,000 points. From 17.8 to about 18.9. So a significant gain over the same period of time. Now ask yourself what rising rates would do in those markets.
Oh, it would have. I think it would have an impact. It would be measurable.
It would bulldoze those gains.
I don't think it'd be
a significant setback.
Yeah.
Be a significant setback because we don't have the capacity here, at least it seems, to print and support the economy the same way that the United States did back in March 2020.
I wonder how much borrowed money is put right into the market too. People find an opportunity. I'm going to borrow some money very cheaply, put it in a market, make some gains.
It's almost like people at this table have done that.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. I look in the mirror every day and I see somebody that does that.
It's crazy though. Like this is what's going on out there. And so when these guys talk about, this is a bit off track here, but like, for example, that home tax, you know, we have to cool the market down. What we should do is put a tax on speculators. No, man. What you should do is worry about the incentives you've destroyed over the last 40 years, really put a bow on it the last 12 months or 15 months and figure out how to get back to normal over time, which will mean people will incur pain.
It's, you know, low-hanging fruit. Do something like this. It's easy to say, look, we're doing what we can to try to curb any problems. And whatever.
It's so dumb. This is a dumb policy. And this story...
And further compounding this, we're in a minority government. Federally, we're in a minority
government.
Sort of. So they're always campaigning. It's always campaign mode with these guys.
Do you think that we're in a minority government? I had this discussion with my father 2 hours ago about how really liberal minority with NDP is not quite a minority now the same way it was 10 years ago. We know that the liberals and NDP are closer and closer in policy position. And really, they're just mincing words over whether or not there should be any billionaires, right? Like in the most recent proposal, which insanity. Tax
of 100%?
Every dollar over a billion you earn is taxed 100%. That's insanity.
Elimination of billionaires. That's an awesome policy.
That guy.
The thing is.
I gotta be careful what I say.
They're cash strapped. Which is actually quite ironic that they want to cash trap everybody too, but they have no incentive, they have no capacity to actually go into an election. They're going to do everything they can to try to delay it as much as possible because they're in debt. And I remember the last election, they had to sell one of their properties in Toronto just to pay off their debt. Now, how many more properties could they sell to keep paying off debt? Eventually, that well's going to run dry.
Well, I want to make sure they pay capital gains on their properties.
That's a very good point.
Have they owned it for 5 years?
That's a great point. Can we
get a little bit of tax on that? Make sure you pay.
Is there anything else you want to talk on this topic?
Okay, what's next?
Okay, so I want to talk about exchanges.
Give this read. I got to go get another fizzy water.
So we have the cryptocurrency exchanges. And at this particular moment that they hold less than 2 million Bitcoin, with this number declining every month. So... the hodlers and institutions are taking the BTC and putting them into cold storage. In fact, just this week, we had two very large deposits or withdrawals, one of 12,000 and another one of 12,000 on the 6th and the 9th of April. Interesting enough, too, going overseas, BTC is actually really hot in South Korea. Not North Korea, Joey, but South Korea. North Korea is going to probably try and tokenize their Kim Jong-un coin.
Let's get a Kim Jong-un NFT for his haircut.
That'd be fantastic. I can't wait for the coin to actually be listed on Coinbase.
Let's get that going.
So in fact, it's so hot in Korea that their exchange Corbit is showing that there's an 18% premium when purchasing Bitcoin over there as opposed to global exchanges. So it just goes to show you, Joey, that there's a shortage right now of Bitcoin. Exchanges can't hold them. It's going out faster than it comes in. It's almost a fire sale. It comes in, people buy it, it's gone.
There's a squeeze.
Yeah.
I went on HODL Waves on, I can't remember the name of the website, but I think it's a Glassnode tool. The HODL Waves show that even after the tripling in price since December, about half of the coins in circulation haven't moved in about a year. That's incredible.
That's long-term hodlers, man.
That's incredible. I didn't go. I should have. Now that I'm reading this, I should have gone back to 2016, 17 and seen.
We've been on a run for the past more
this
than
is a 5. This is a 5-month run,
right?
Basically, from 20 to 60, it's been a rocket.
From March though,
the COVID low.
As soon as COVID hit, BTC took a dive.
Right,
everything took a dive.
Yeah,
but then it had some gradual gains, and then you're right. 5 months ago, then it's been just on this massive tear. But it hasn't been on a steady decline since, well, long before COVID. But COVID, like that was the bench, like the point where you say, okay, this is the lowest it's gone for some time. And since then, it's just been continually climbing, or actually quickly climbing, depending on which point in time you're looking at.
Here's a question for you. I don't have stats for this, but I'd be curious about your thoughts here. What do you think the percentage of stocks that were purchased in the last year, whether or not they've moved or been sold by brokerage accounts, Robinhood, Wealthsimple, do you think that there's more now people holding BTC steady than there are people holding equity steady in the last 365 days?
Yeah, BTC encourages holding it and saving. Buying stocks, buying these equities, they're liquid. You buy and sell depending on if it goes up. It goes up 15%. Sometimes you say, that's it, I'm going to sell and then go into something else. That's just the nature of the market. I can't see people buying something long-term, maybe something like Tesla or Apple or whatever. But
Tesla.
There's a lot of other stocks people are just buying and just liquidating as soon as it goes up to that magic number that they're happy with and pulling out with their profits. Or sometimes it goes down. And they're like, you know, they figure it's just time just to...
You just bite it.
Yeah, cut their losses. Although in the past 12 months, not many stocks did go down large enough for people to actually say, I had enough. Just wait an extra couple of weeks, it's caught up. It's been a great bull run for the stock market.
Project Zimbabwe. Like I said, if the money printing keeps coming, then that's it. So one other thing to note here, given what you just said, is it fair to say that the newest Bitcoin investor crowd is more mature than the newest stock investor crowd? Which is really incredible to say, given the media coverage of Bitcoin as a speculative asset, it's a mania, tulips this.
Does holding something quantify maturity?
Don't know. I think like you said, it at least shows that you have some concern about your time horizon, that maybe people like boomers, I would say, view people my age, like in my 30s, maybe not guys in your age, but in your age bracket, but guys my age and younger, they view us as fly by night, unable to kind of plan for the future, sort of.
That's just the nature of it.
There's terms like swirling in my head, but like you get the picture.
Right. I mean, yeah. You don't have the experience. This is just part of life. You have to go through this to learn an adventure. You get to a point, you figure out how things should work and how things should be done.
Right.
But in terms of hodling BTC versus buying and trading stocks, the frequency of each, I think they're kind of independent of the two. Mm-hmm. The stock market's always been like that. Like just buying and selling stuff, you know, as quick as you want or as long as you want. BTC just by nature is just holding it. It's kind of a saving mentality. When you pull out fiat currency to buy BTC, you're kind of like leaving it in there. You're not going to buy something with the BTC. You kind of basically reserved yourself to say, that's locked in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave it there until it comes to a point where I'm going to sell it and exchange it back into fiat, or just leave it there forever.
For goods, right? That's the plan.
Right. And that's
my plan.
Anyway. Part of the scarcity of BTC is people are hodling it forever. They don't plan on taking it out and just leaving it there.
You know what Willy Woo, Willy Woo calls the sort of hodlers of last resort?
No.
The Rick Astley's, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Great song, by the way.
Yeah. Don't know if I go that far. But
I remember when it came out.
I don't. I think it came out the year I was born.
It was 87, 88. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I've mentioned that, you know, one of the best sort of things about the network before is the transparency of the coin movement. And HODLways, if you're ever wondering whether or not the base of Bitcoin is growing and maturing, you're ever having second thoughts, that's the place to look.
Glassnode is another one.
Glassnode is what makes HODLways.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic...
Great resource.
Yeah. So next item I have is basically the biggest one that we could talk about today and perhaps maybe for the next few weeks.
I'm ready.
Is that Coinbase IPO is scheduled for April 14th. That's in 2 days as of recording this podcast. Joey, take it away.
This is insane, man. This is a huge IPO. Let's talk a bit about a few things here. Okay, Coinbase as a business, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, is incredible. If you're a Wall Street guy, if you're an equity investor, if you're a person who manages money, family office or broker or otherwise, whether you're running your own cash or someone else's, this is a bulletproof way to park a few bucks. The business itself is more or less a regulatory bridge with a moat of capital built in. They've done all the work for you as far as establishing regulatory controls, quote unquote controls, they're influencing regulation. They've done all the work for you as far as making sure that your coin is up to snuff as far as privacy and network security once it comes onto their platform. So your custody, for example, is rock solid on Coinbase. There's never going to be a Coinbase hack, probably, at least as far as I can tell. And all that stuff means is it's the ultimate scalable business. Here's your solution for your coin. These are the requirements you have to meet. By the way, when you put the coin on our network, you have to pay us some amount of incredible. It's the most incredible scale business. That said,
All these numbers have been recently reported and some are still coming.
I'm not even going to get to the numbers yet. But we will get there because there's some other numbers that you didn't report that I want to talk about that are as important as the data that you had about their money coming in. Only problem I have with Coinbase is that they're antithetical to the Bitcoin mission in almost every sense. They cooperate with regulators and help to write policy that generally is unfavorable to Bitcoiners. They have coin tracking analytics built into their platform. We'll get to that later. They discourage privacy moves, and Coinbase for a time also was blacklisting coins that were used on gambling sites and to buy illicit substances, things like that. murky waters for them, obviously. But as a Bitcoiner and someone who's into crypto, even whether it's an alt or this, like, certainly you have to at least admit, regardless of the coin you have, that if you can't use it for drugs and sex, then it's not money. The other thing is that they encourage this sort of diversifying instead of diversifying. I don't know if that comes through on the mic. I should listen to the podcast to see if that pronunciation comes through. But they encourage you to basically spread out your money among alts. Okay, but like how many alts are outperforming Bitcoin over the lifespan of the altcoin? The answer is probably none.
Probably, but if you look at a shorter time frame.
Yeah, but who cares? Shorter time frame? Like, okay, fine. If you want to invest in something small, fine. I get that. The other thing is that Coinbase has the highest fees of any exchange anywhere in the world, as far as I can tell.
They're the biggest face here. When people think about, I mean, if you ask somebody in the street that kind of has even a passing knowledge of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, and if you ask them, I want to buy it, they would probably say Coinbase is the place to do it. It's the first that somebody would actually think, the first place somebody would think of to actually purchase it. And it makes sense because they've been in all our faces for some time.
It kind of
makes sense. It was the first place I bought it.
Okay, it kind of makes sense. But I want you to take a step back here for a second. Without getting into the fee structure, which I believe is $2 American a transaction and 4% of whatever
you criminal, buy. It's criminal, but high. It works. That's what makes this IPO so...
But how many times in your life have you stayed with the first and most convenient vendor for a product? I would argue you probably have never stayed with the first and most convenient vendor. What you do instead is you shop around.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And once you're competent in the subject area, you go somewhere else. So for example... You know, if you're buying a car, you may go to a dealer first, and then later you may say, okay, well, why don't I try this used dealership, or my mechanic's got a few cars for sale, blah, blah, blah. Then once you know a bit about cars, you start to look at private sales, you can evaluate a car, things of that nature. I would even say this is comparable. You know what? I honestly believe that this is comparable to like a deli. Going to the Fortino's deli and buying whatever, steaks or something like that, as opposed to going to like a private butcher. The butcher is going to do a better job.
You got a better quality.
It's going to be better quality product. It's going to be about the same price or cheaper. And it's just a little out of the way. You had to do a little research. You had to get comfortable with something that you haven't been comfortable with before.
You're only getting half the story here because there's also the institutional side of things.
And I do want to get there, but go ahead.
Continue your thought then. I don't want to interrupt it.
This is, okay, so let's go into the numbers. The fiscal year ending in December 31st, 2020, on December 31st, 2020, Coinbase had... $1.14 billion in revenue, up 140% from 2019.
Amazing.
That's a lot of money, man. Yeah. A lot of money.
The growth is what really astounds me. Is this sustainable? I don't know. But I think there is some room to grow.
Here's the thing that really should be amazing to you. The bull run didn't start until the end of December. Right? We didn't get over 20,000 until like December 18th or 19th or something like that.
Yeah.
So they had 11 days where this thing was in the news as making an all-time high. The rest of it was in arguably a brutal beating year, or at least first half of the year for Bitcoin. And they still made that much money. That's fee capture for sure. I don't know if that's sustainable, but it's also...
Eventually that well will run dry.
It's transaction volume though. Like even if you lower the fees, like you said, and you can scale, presumably your scaling would include like cost-effective technologies that help you continue to capture at volume, even if you reduce the cost per transaction to the user, right? That's a bonkers number. Now it gets even better. The first quarter of 2019, $1.8 billion, almost as much as they made in all of 2020.
And 2019, the first
2021, quarter. Sorry, 2021 first quarter, they made $1.8 billion, more than they made in all of 2020. That's what incredible. A bull market looks like for them.
I want to see what the rest of this year is going to translate.
We're
going to
see.
We're going to
see in the same quarter last year, Q1 2020, they made $190 million. So that's 9 times the cash. My eyes are wide open here because I'm buying coin. When
a lot of people
out.
Are.
I'm buying coin on day one. So what else do I have written down here? I'm just going through my notes. Does it? I mean, all this stuff says the same thing. It's just one number is smaller than the other number, and then the percentage gain is astronomical over and over again. Quarter, user base.
No, it's good
matter.
News after good news.
There's nothing bad on this entire report. And yeah. I went to their release, and it's pretty transparent. There's not a lot of stuff hiding in there. Now, I'll make a comment here. I'm stealing this from Matt Odell because he was upset earlier this year when Coinbase sold analytics data from its platform to the U.S. government. And claimed that it had to do so to recoup costs. Do you know how much the contract with the government was for? $180,000.
It's peanuts.
Isn't it? And yet these guys were making the case at the time that they had to do that to recoup the cost of whatever program they did with the analytic. Incredibly, it's a huge lie.
Yeah, I'd like to see the what's really going on
these
there.
Guys,
there's something that's not being told.
These guys are not on your side. Okay, they're not on your side. I think there are exchanges that are on your side. They're harder to use. I would say ShakePay is one of them. I'd say Bull Bitcoin is one of them.
Canadians, absolutely.
There's probably a few other ones.
Netcoins,
whatever. Newton is not that bad either.
Newton is very good. Yeah, we discussed all these last week, in fact.
Yeah, but this as a just as an aside, this privacy thing to recoup costs, that should rub you the wrong way. Privacy is the most important part about your financial life. You don't tell people what you spend your money on, right? Unless you're on the Two Whites and a Blue podcast and you tell at the beginning of every show, but you don't tell people what you spend your money on. You shred your credit card bills. You shred your bank statements. You don't tell people how much you earn. All that stuff. It's private. This is an important piece because, as we will get to later, these guys are holding a not insignificant chunk of the entire crypto market in their wallets. It's important. These guys have to show that privacy is a priority. And I'm curious, this is kind of an aside or a tangent, but Apple is now really pushing for privacy on their devices. So will they allow stuff like this to continue to exist on their platform if the privacy thing is not in line? Because don't tell me they won't take on a giant because they're taking on Facebook right now.
Yeah.
So they will take on a giant. There's other options besides Coinbase. Facebook is the only thing in that world basically that runs as a social network.
MySpace.
Yeah, is that still around? They have an app. This is what I'm saying. If iPhone decides to take these guys on a privacy...
They'll lock horns with just about anybody.
So why wouldn't Apple then do their own Bitcoin thing? I think that's coming. I think this is a natural... It's like a natural evolution of the privacy thing. Cook is giving interviews now to the Toronto Star of all the fucking papers.
I speculated so many times. Apple has so much money that they're sitting on that is just essentially doing nothing. It makes sense for them to buy Bitcoin, as you say, create some sort of medium that people could buy Bitcoin.
Like put a hardware key in the phone.
There's a lot of possibilities here, but I don't want it to go too far into the weeds here and talk about Apple. I want to just focus more on Coinbase. So are you going to be buying when they come out with the IPO?
Yeah.
I got a couple of things I actually want to talk about. For the institutional side of things, remember, when institutions want in on Bitcoin, they have a few different options, Coinbase being one of them.
What are the options, you think? It's Coinbase, Gemini, Kraken, basically, and
NYDIG. I would imagine...
Shortlist.
Right.
Yeah.
FTX, maybe?
There has to be a custody solution. That's the thing that's going to...
Goldman Sachs?
Or Fidelity? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the... I don't know. I think it's a short list, though, basically.
So, there's a stat that I have here is that they currently have $122 billion of assets for institutions. So, a lot of institutions have come in and purchased through them, and they're holding the Bitcoin for them.
Yeah. Bitcoin... So it doesn't say Bitcoin. It says assets.
Oh, assets. Sorry. You're correct. It could be something else. But it's a lot of crypto that they're holding onto. Also,
Bitcoin right now is $1 trillion in market cap. So
Bitcoin is $1 trillion, 1.14,
and the rest of it's another trillion.
So yeah, it's about $2 trillion
so
combined.
Let's say this is, I don't know, is it fair to say it's like probably 75% Bitcoin?
Probably,
75%.
I can't see Cardano making a huge
at 75%. It's 1/10 of the market cap on Coinbase. It's a lot of coin. It's a lot of coin, man.
And just to go to show you like. The traditional way of doing things, so the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ combined their value, the companies which own the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ, they're only worth $25 billion combined. So look at...
Man.
Coinbase is going to be over $100 billion.
It's going to be... I think
that's based on predictions.
Well, is that private market trading? What's the trading privately? I heard privately it was up over 300 billion. That was the estimate that it was gonna reach there by year end.
That's incredible.
It's a huge number. Huge number.
Do you know that they're going to be allowing their employees to sell right away?
I saw that.
So Google employees, for example, they had to wait, was it 6 months?
Different time, though.
Different time. But the fact that they're going to allow their employees to sell, I'm wondering as soon as the IPO drops, if the price will also drop as well. Because there's probably going to be a lot of people that have invested all this time that are just going to want to liquidate and make some bank here.
Is there not... Like,
not all, they'll probably sell a portion of what they have.
Is there not thousands of people who would love to get that at the IPO price?
Like, I don't know what's going to be overwhelming. What's going to be more overwhelming? The people selling or the people buying? I'm curious to see, like, you know, after 10, 11 o'clock, where it finds its equilibrium.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I guess we'll just have to wait to see what happens. We're only 2 days away, day and a half, really. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
On the subject of IPO valuations, I pulled up a list that's in the show notes about the IPOs during 2020 in the tech space. Arguably the most speculative 365 days we've seen ever, even more than late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these you'll recognize. Casper Mattresses. How much do you think their IPO is worth? Their last private valuation.
$3.5 billion.
$1 billion. Let's go a little further down the list here to another company you may be familiar with, Lemonade. Pretty high profile tech IPO insurance.
7.5.
$2 billion.
Oh, I'm way off.
Now here's one for you. This will be the last one we touch. Invested in by none other than, there'll be two more, maybe three more. Invested in this one, none other than Warren Buffett himself and Berkshire bought a big chunk of this, Snowflake. Their last private valuation.
I remember this was actually big news not too long ago. Yeah. I can't even.
Their last private valuation, significantly different from their IPO valuation. So I'll give you both. Their last private was $12 billion. They IPO'd at $33.
Did this happen in December or January?
This was recently. I don't know exactly when, but September 16th.
Wow. Okay. My time frame is way off.
So I'll give you a couple more. Palantir, famous government. CIA, PSYOP, whatever they're doing there, something, data management, data sharing. Last private valuation, 10.5. IPO valuation, what do you think?
7.
22.
Incredible, went up that.
Yeah, and there's a couple other
ones
here.
It's taken a beating since. A
couple other ones here that you'll recognize. DoorDash, huge company. What do you think they IPO'd at value?
4.
40.
Not that much? That's incredible.
Airbnb was 47, Wish was 14. So all those companies, Coinbase is probably going to IPO at least three times the highest.
You know what?
I think it's
still going to rip them all.
It's got to be about 150 probably when all said and done. That'll be the valuation on opening day.
It's going to be a really interesting day.
That's going to be a psycho day.
Yeah.
In Bitcoin, in Coinbase, in Bitcoin equities, in everything.
Yeah.
In everything. That's going to be the final boot in the front door for all these firms who've been on the fence about investing in anything related to Bitcoin, whether it's equities or chain analytics.
You're still going to have the Warren Buffetts of the world just saying, no, it's rat poison.
Warren Buffett's underperformed the index the last 20 years.
I know.
I don't give a fuck about that guy.
I know.
He's good for a couple of good one-liners every year at his
thing. I'm more Munger than him.
Yeah, Munger is funnier. You're right. I like Charlie better. But these guys, you know, they're legendary. Don't get me wrong, but...
They're dinosaurs.
Even Jordan had to retire, right? And so sometimes things get too fast for you, and I think they're probably there. Anyway, that's an aside as well. But interesting, I will be buying the Coinbase IPO, like I've mentioned on this show before.
Are you going to wait, or are you going to buy right away?
You got to buy day of. I'm going to buy day of. I paid for the Wealthsimple premium today, so $3 a month. It's all current, no delays, no nothing.
You can move $1,000, so you get $1,000.
You get $1,000 every 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is sick. So I'll have $1,000 by Wednesday, and I'm going to dump it all in. Why not? I already got $1,000 there. So I want to land at about $2,000 into that thing.
Problem with Wealthsimple, when you buy US-based stocks, you're paying a premium when you're buying
it's like
in
a, it's
and
like
selling.
A point. Who cares?
Wow.
I'm holding. I don't care.
If you have any, I think you have a TD account.
I do.
You may want to consider using that. So
don't show me your fiat bank. That's the end of the A block. Hopefully you guys like that better than last week's A block. What's on the B block? So these are stories. I'll give you some background here. Len gives me the A block stories a day in advance. I look at them. I add some notes. I think about them. My blood boils a bit depending on the topic. And then I come here ready to shoot. And now Len's got a couple other stories. We're going to get through these stories in 20 minutes-ish, I hope.
I hope. It's quite a bit to talk
20
about.
20 minutes. I'm not going to talk about them as much. And you're not going to talk about them as much. We're going to go 20 minutes. Then we're going to go the last 20 on the topic of the week, which I believe is wallets.
Yes.
Love it. Okay, let's go. B block.
Bitcoin has reached 6% of the U.S. dollar size, M1. So the U.S. dollar M1 is 18.4 trillion, and Bitcoin's at 6% of that.
M1 is physical cash, coins. Is that checking accounts as well? I don't know exactly.
No.
I think it's just physical cash and coins. M2 is checking accounts, savings accounts, and then M3 includes credit and other vehicles, right? I'm pretty sure.
So MicroStrategy, they purchased more BTC. I have different numbers here how much they hold. I have 1.4 million that they hold. I also have as low as 700,000. Whatever that number is, I don't know what it is. They hold a hell of a lot of BTC.
Mike Saylor is paying his board in Bitcoin now.
They're offering, yeah.
He's paying his board. So, yeah. If there's ever a guy that was all in, it's him. Also, I don't know if he's leaking these photos, but there's just another picture of that guy with two good-looking women in bikinis who got to be 30 years his junior almost every day on Twitter. So
is he hitched?
What do you think?
I honestly don't know.
He's married to the mission, baby. Are you kidding me?
So the number of nodes in the Bitcoin Lightning Network, this actually, it's near and dear to my heart because I'm going through the process of setting one up. So anyways, for the Lightning Network, the number of nodes has nearly doubled year over year, reaching 10,000 operating nodes. The Lightning Network has now 42,000 channels that are open. They have 1,198 Bitcoin, over $770 million of capacity. So
that's pretty good. Lightning Network is an application on Bitcoin that is second layer, settles much quicker, quote unquote, settles much quicker as far as consumer or peer-to-peer, and then settles on the main chain.
At a later date.
Great idea.
A later time, sorry.
Great idea. This is the thing that most normies are looking for, I think. Make sure you tell your normie friends that Visa doesn't settle transactions immediately either when they ask you about Lightning Network. And yeah, it's good to know. I'm ready for you to hit the note. I got some money on my ShapePay. I'll send you it when
awesome. When you're ready. I'm actually ashamed to say it. I purchased the wrong SD card. I needed a micro SD. I purchased the
big one?
Yeah.
What year is it? What do you put in? Your Nikon 4 megapixel camera?
So I have to return it back to Amazon. Man. So anyways, I have to wait 2 more days to get my micro SD.
That's all right. Set. That's all right.
So anyways, that's good. Where I'm at personally.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that.
As am I. So yeah. Next story, I have the Bitcoin hash network reached an all-time high of 180 exahash per second.
Didn't we have this last week?
It's increased. It was 160 last week. Oh. It's 180 now.
That's a big jump.
Yeah.
I like that.
So the mining difficulty has actually increased 5.8% last Friday. That's also, they reached a new all-time high for mining difficulty. And their mining difficulty is up 66% over the past year. There's a lot more capacity right now for mining Bitcoin, and obviously the code itself is making it more difficult.
Next difficulty adjust in 2 days, it's probably going to go up 2.25%. It's a lot. It's actually like a steady increase here. Hardly any downward adjustments in the last, 3 months-ish.
So next I have is Coinbase.
Sprinkled in, but that's it.
Another topic on Coinbase, this is very just brief. It's more valuable than Goldman Sachs. Interestingly enough, they called Bitcoin not an asset class last year. So the fact that they called it not an asset class, now Coinbase is going to be worth more than Goldman Sachs. It's kind of ironic.
If you had to get a credit card that was Bitcoin back, certainly Coinbase would be a candidate to issue one in the next year, don't you think?
Probably, but we have one already with Fold,
we
right?
can't get that.
In Canada.
Canadians can't get that.
I don't think Coinbase is going to issue us.
Canadians will take, I'll take any Bitcoin-backed credit card I can get.
There's a Bitcoin-backed mortgage.
I already have a mortgage.
You're going
to? I know, maybe I'll break it. I don't know. I got a pretty good rate. Or I guess it's variable, but still. Any Bitcoin-backed
thing. Not backed mortgage. There's a mortgage that you get.
Bitcoin back on the.
Yeah, up to $3,500
right,
Bitcoin.
Right.
So that's, you know, the options you can
get. That's a couple months worth of buys, buddy.
Yeah. Think about it next time you're renewing your mortgage. It's a broker, so they're going to get competitive rates.
Yeah.
So you're not stuck with some crappy rate.
Canadians need, if you're, well, I hope you're Canadian listening to the show. If you know of a Bitcoin back card service, like I use Lolli all the time. Like I bought some shirts on Everlane a few weeks ago because they had 9% Bitcoin back. Worth it. Other places that you can get Bitcoin back on gift cards and stuff, like Fold is
Fold,
good for
that. Yeah.
But if you know of a service, like hit me, DM me, tweet me, Reddit me, whatever. Let's get it. I want to put that stuff on the show and I want to talk to the people who are running those services and find out what the fuck is going on with the credit cards.
We'll pump those.
I'll pump anything if it's kept Bitcoin back.
Exactly.
No mercy. No due diligence.
So next topic I have here, it's going to the Ukraine. Their public officials are reporting as owning 46,000 Bitcoin. That includes city councils, the Ministry of Defense staff, and even their members of parliament. So it goes to show you that even people that are sitting members over there, other officials in Ukraine, they're not pro fiat. They're buying BTC. Why? It's a good storage of value.
We've talked about this at work before, putting in an ATIP on government officials that hold Bitcoin and disclose Bitcoin in their conflict form. But there's no...
So just to go into it, ATIP, it's an access to information.
It's FOIA in the States, Freedom of Information, but it's for Canada. And
it applies to the Canadian government.
Federal
you can't
government,
just ATIP
government.
Anything.
Yeah, I can't just ATIP and see what you have
a private citizen
last week. Yeah. But anyway, there's no FOIA filter for cryptocurrencies. So that tells you that they are not really thinking about it. But I still think that probably you can look and see if it's been declared on a conflict form, because I'm sure you can get like a financial conflict report. I haven't really gone through the process and like asked the ATIP people.
That would be redacted. They would black so much out of that. And
all I want to see is the word Bitcoin or crypto.
You don't
want
to see amount or whom?
Don't care. I want the name and I want Bitcoin or crypto. I don't need to know how much you have.
I think just by
I just
having
want to know
that,
who's holding.
I think it's too much information. When
you think?
When you hear Joe Smith, blackened out, Bitcoin. I think now you could basically connect the dots and say Joe Smith owns Bitcoin.
But that's fine. That's if it's a conflict, I'm entitled to know what the conflicts of my representatives and public servants are, am I not?
I guess, but is that really a conflict?
Think back to like, I'm not even going to say it because it's going to dox me, but like in my career, I have some experience with both clearance forms, like elevated clearance forms and ATIP requests, submissions and responses. And I don't think that would get blanked out. Do you think it would?
I think so.
Huh.
The fact that you would be reporting how much they own or even the fact that they own anything, is that a protected...
Don't know.
So,
because it puts them in danger maybe? Is that the case that would be made?
Right. Yeah. And does this really... Does it really matter?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that some
MPs... Because they'll vote in their self-interest. So I want to know if MPs have Bitcoin when it comes to...
But they would... I would imagine,
you know,
just like
the
a
next
company...
Time, the next time somebody from the whatever sitting government decides that they want to tax my unrealized gains on everything else that I own, running shoes that are appreciating in my closet or something, they want to get that. It's only a matter of time until they come for Bitcoin.
Oh, they're coming for everything.
I know. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I want to see who has it so I can choose who to vote for. So that I can vote in my self-interest and align myself with politicians who see that my way.
Fair enough.
I recommend everybody do that. That's a recommendation for me. That is advice.
Submit an ATIP.
Yeah, that is advice.
ATIP
find
everything.
Find out who's got Bitcoin and vote with them.
What's the cost in an ATIP too? It's
$10.
It's nominal.
It's $10. Then if they call you and they have...
How many sats is that? Let's do the it's
nothing. It's like 4 days of shaking on ShakePay.
That's a joke.
Yeah, it's not much. Which reminds me, I got to shake. What's,
do it right
what's
now.
Next on the list?
So I have another Coinbase piece of information here. Coinbase has reported they have 56 million users. Now, probably not all active. Like you and I both are users on there. We're not active. But, you know, just a piece of information. So 56 million users are on Coinbase. And if everyone is to purchase BTC, that's not even enough to purchase half a coin.
Wow. If everyone purchases what?
BTC. Like
how many purchases how much?
It just maxes it out.
It maxes it out.
Like if every person could purchase the equivalent amount as the next person, still it's not even, it's half a coin. Not even half a coin for all these people that are left.
That's... Supply squeeze.
That maxes to 21 million Bitcoin in existence.
Yeah, there's only 17 or 18 out now, right? What's the circulating supply?
How much is lost, too? I know. There's a lot of... So it just goes to show you the scarcity of BTC. It's there, and it's not going to grow. They're not going to find more of this. If 21 million total is going to be mined, whatever's lost is lost.
Are you worried about this? I should have mentioned this on the other Coinbase topic, but I'll mention it here. Are you worried about the crypto council thing at all? Did you see this?
Yes.
Square, Fidelity, yes. PayPal, and Coinbase, right? Or Square, Fidelity.
It's not getting good press.
How can it?
Yeah.
How can it?
What is their motives?
Paradigm is an analytics firm. Coinbase is, basically an analytics firm, I guess. They're obviously a custodial exchange, but Square, fine, and Fidelity, fine. Paradigm, I think, is headed up by a guy who was a co-founder at Coinbase. So that's...
There's the connection.
Two votes in the room that are always going to go one way. Square, I don't know. They do have like a developer fund, which is sick. They basically send Satoshis to people who are anonymous online, which is unreal. Like, good for them. But I don't know. I'm concerned about that.
You may be concerned, but I've discussed this in previous episodes. What we have right now with BTC, it's not the final product. There's going to be some, I don't know if it's going to say evolution. Perhaps there is some minor evolution. Eventually, you're going to have more governments involved in getting their hands in the pot here.
Trying to change the protocol?
Maybe trying to find a way through to do some more taxation so they could get their hands on it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot that's going to be changing going forward. What we see here, it's always being updated. There's always modifications to it.
Yeah.
So this is just another evolutionary step. In the whole process,
I am concerned. I'll say that.
Yeah. And a lot of people are very concerned. So, since we are a Canadian podcast, we should have some Canadian news. So, actually a new ETF that was born, BTCQ on a TSX. BTCQ.
I'm gonna look it up.
Keep so talking. It's got apparently its parents, the 3iQ Corp, is going to be the one managing it. So. Mm-hmm. There you go. So more opportunity to buy Bitcoin through ETF, BTCQ.
I opened Yahoo Finance. Freeland's making an announcement about the Air Canada relief package. Holy fuck.
They need a bailout.
More and more money.
Keep printing it.
I can't believe it. Anyway.
Oh, wait. Are you shocked that they're going to be bailing out or giving some sort of relief to the airlines?
No.
Whatever. It's just... It was going to happen.
Are you invested in Air Canada?
No.
Me neither.
No.
My father is.
It might be a decent long-term play, considering once things open up.
Leave me in travel. It's fine. TRVL.
TRVL's it's a fun one.
Leave me there.
So
okay, yeah. More ETFs is good. I like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So next one I have is B Computing is expected to continue the mass production of Bitcoin miners, incorporating the 7-nanometer ASICs circuits. So... There we go. So they're not stopping.
What about production. Is there not a chip shortage?
There is, but somehow they're going to continue to do mass productions of Bitcoin miners.
Good for them.
You touched on this earlier about younger people, you know, buying and selling stuff quickly, and you know, interesting. I got a stat here: 9% of U.S. teenagers say they have traded in cryptocurrencies. That's a fair number.
That's probably low.
I think that's astounding. You're going from 13 to 19. I'm not sure how many people under the age of 18 can do it legally.
None.
So you're talking basically 18, 19 by law.
Think about this.
9% of that whole group.
If you go on eBay, you can sell like Fortnite V-Bucks. I'm pretty sure. You could essentially trade that for Bitcoin if you wanted to. That's a digital currency trade. I think RuneScape is still going. I can't believe I'm talking about RuneScape on another podcast, but I'm pretty sure RuneScape is still going.
It seems to be a reoccurring topic.
Oh my God, I've never played it, but you can trade money for Bitcoin, presumably, in that.
There's a lot of games that you could do that.
Rare items you could trade for Bitcoin on eBay or in-game otherwise. Lots of marketplaces for this. This is not surprising, and I bet you that number is underreported. 9 seems low. Is the answer not... Like 20% of everyone over 18.
But what you're mentioning...
Or like 18, 19, sorry. Like, isn't it 20%? Everyone who got one of those checks in the States. Like, are you telling me really only 9% of them bought Bitcoin?
But what you... Okay. I don't know about that. But when you're talking about the games, I don't think they're going to consider that as a cryptocurrency.
But the Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency.
It is.
So then what's the definition of trade? You traded cryptocurrency.
Buy and or sell.
I think that's got to be included. I would think that's the first thing I thought of. I can sell. It's easier for me to sell something for Bitcoin under 18 than it is for me to sell it for cash or whatever. Isn't it? It is. So like, why wouldn't you include that? I think that would be included.
Okay, I see. Okay.
Call that guy and ask him.
Fair enough.
Call, who's that? Pew? Who did that?
I'm going to have to look at that. So next one I have is your buddy Mark Cuban.
Oh, man.
And he says that crypto traders should buy Ethereum over Bitcoin.
It's not surprising, is it? I had this conversation with Will on the Two Whites podcast on Friday because he finally capitulated and bought 2-to-1 Bitcoin ETH. And he asked me...
He was Cardano. He said he bought Cardano a couple episodes ago.
He's got $1,000 for the Cardano as a moonshot. Stupid, but I'll let him make that mistake with too much grief. Whatever. The thing I said to him about ETH, based on this whole thing about it being the number two Bitcoin or number two crypto in the space, blah, blah, blah. He's like, isn't it the number two? I kind of shrugged like, well, I guess.
It is. It's not a guess. It is.
Nah.
Look at my market cap. It is.
I'm glad you said that. Let's talk about that.
Go ahead.
How many Ethereum are in production right now?
I don't know how many, but no I know it's unlimited.
No one does. And how many are they going to print?
Unlimited.
So then the market cap doesn't matter. If me and you print Len and Joey token and we price it at $1 trillion a coin and we print 40 of them, guess what? The market cap is so high. We just need one person to buy it.
Right.
Ethereum market cap doesn't matter.
Traded at north of 2,000 right now.
So what?
And people are buying it at that price.
Yeah, I'm not worried about
it. So that multiplied by the outstanding tokens out there or whatever.
Yeah.
No
one knows how many tokens outstanding, by the way, right? That's a problem. Can't audit the supply. So that's a huge issue. The other huge issue, again, with charlatan Mark, this is a predictable playbook. I didn't buy Bitcoin. I didn't like it. Now I have a problem because it's too expensive. I want to get more units. I use my platform to push this other thing, blah, blah, blah. It's the same story
It's always going to be a play.
Like, same story
in the stock market, that also applies too. People don't want to buy whatever, and then they buy some lesser company because it's cheaper.
Trash.
Thinking, I'm going to get more of this. Right.
These people
it's not a winning strategy.
Cuban is smarter than that. He's got a tech background. He knows, which makes it worse. It's one thing if like whatever Bitcoin Trey on Twitter, whoever that guy was pumping BitConnect back in 2017. It's one thing if he does it because he's stupid. Like he's a stupid influencer. He doesn't have a tech background. He made a couple bucks on altcoins when everyone was making a couple bucks on altcoins.
One thing about Cuban, he kind of puts his, he sticks his neck out there and he's actually accepted Doge.
Yeah.
I believe
we talked about that last week. Yeah, yeah.
He's purchased tickets for the Dallas Mavericks.
Who cares?
So it's not like he's pumping up something to try to drive down the price of something else so he could buy it. He's putting his money where his mouth is here.
He wants,
or at least with Doge.
Well, he probably bought Ethereum, and now he wants other people to buy Ethereum.
Drive up the price so he could probably make some. That's fine.
Fine. I hate it. It's a stupid move.
The Kevin O'Leary's of the world.
O'Leary's
doing the same
in
thing.
Bitcoin. O'Leary's in Bitcoin.
But he's doing the same. Now he was, you know, he was anti-cryptocurrency.
But that's a guy who, that's like O'Leary I have more respect for. Speaking of Canadians, like I have more respect for that guy because he was honest about the mistake he made to pump the NO and to a couple of people on MSNBC over the last
he's seen the light.
He gets it. He gets it now, right? So whatever, fine. I skip this guy. I hate Mark Cuban. Let's leave it at that.
You ever hear of Rick Caruso?
No.
Okay, so Rick Caruso.
Is he a 1980s private investigator?
Miami Vice.
Matlock side character? Like, who's
no, no. Guy? So Rick Caruso, he's actually the owner of a real estate company in Southern California. He's, in fact, a billionaire, and he's got a large number of properties over there, retail and whatnot. So, in fact, they're going to be accepting Bitcoin for payment for the rental of their properties over there. So...
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know who's going to pay.
Well, I look at Airbnb and I think like Airbnb is a perfect candidate for Bitcoin. Same with.
He does residential and retail property. So he's got.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. I wouldn't do it, but I'm not in a situation where I have to spend any Satoshis. If I was, then I would have them. They'd be disposable to me. Again, the framework shaping up around taxes and transitory spends of Bitcoin because of Visa, MasterCard, these other players, people like Coinbase. You think Coinbase would IPO knowing that every single time someone spends Bitcoin, it's going to be taxed as cap gains? Like, come on. There's no way that that's going to be the way this pans out. It's just not. It's we talked about this again. I'm rehashing here. Impossible to enforce at scale. Governments cannot keep up with this kind of thing.
Especially as more people adopt it, it's going to be impossible.
Can't
to
keep
do
up
so.
With it. Yeah. And you know, pretty soon people are going to be more and more familiar with digital wallets as USDC or whatever USD, whatever Fed coin comes out, whatever they call it, Jerome Powell coin. Burrcoin. Only matter of time.
So next I have, there's a website called bitcointreasuries.org.
My favorite website to go on.
So they actually track companies that pay employees in Bitcoin. So I actually have...
Isn't it... Okay, I don't want to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Isn't Bitcoin Treasuries Bitcoin on the balance sheet? I think that's what it is.
I don't know.
It's Bitcoin on the balance sheet. That's what that website is.
So they're saying that they have a list of companies that can get that they could pay their employees in Bitcoin. And there are some notable companies that are on the list, such as Alphabet, aka Google, Airbnb, Coinbase, Facebook, Kraken, Uber, and the Sacramento Kings. So there's a that list alone, there's some significant companies. And the fact that they're offering their employees to get paid in Bitcoin is encouraging.
Facebook pays their employees. Or could in Bitcoin?
According to this, yes.
I don't see that here, but I'll take your word for it. That's sick. I didn't realize they were offering that. That's the more that that stuff comes around. Is it bitcointreasuries.org?
Yes.
Yeah. So Novak runs that site. Rodolfo Novak, who invented Cold Card, right? Pretty sure. Oh, it's right here, actually. Yeah, Cold Card and Open Dime. So, okay. Only a matter of time till they get paid in Bitcoin and... If you're getting paid in Bitcoin and you got to spend it, you're not going to get taxed, man. I'm telling you, that's not going to be the way this shakes down. And those companies are no slouch, man. Like, they got regulatory influence and regulatory capture. They're not fucking around.
It's theorized that that site is going to eventually start tracking the companies that don't pay their employees in Bitcoin.
Be easier.
So Hut 8, a Canadian mining company, traded on the TSX, ticker Hut, H-U-T.
Yeah.
So they're going out there, they're raising nearly $400 million in Canadian. So there's going to be some...
What's that, about $9-$10 US?
I can't...
$400 million Canadian's got to be about $9 or $10 United States money, right?
Sorry, I thought you were asking about the stock price.
No.
Gotcha.
That raise. We're getting really hit by the 4X whack there.
So there you go. So there's going to be some devaluation that's going to be going on with Hut 8, just a FYI. Fidelity has been quoted as saying, "We reached a tipping point of Bitcoin adoption."
Incredible. Talk about a 180 from Fidelity. Again, it feels like I'm saying this to more and more people. Like, that's really, you know, from an old entrenched financial institution to have them come this far now.
They just see the light. The writing is on the wall.
Cash to be made here. Yeah. People want this product. Let's give it to them.
Yeah. So China's Inner Mongolia is banning Bitcoin mining.
This is the weekly Inner Mongolia update on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast.
It's a big news, but it is a hotspot for mining BTC. Right. So the fact that they're banning it it may have an impact on, the U.S., for instance. They're trying to attract a lot of miners over there.
Yeah, it's great. Good for us, yeah. I would like Canada to make a push as well. I don't see why we wouldn't.
Energy is not as cheap here.
We got to figure it out. Opportunities abound, man. It's an up-and-coming sector, arguably less and less risk as far as endorsing this sort of thing with your population. And listen to Nick Carter if you think that it's not, you know, quote-unquote green. If you think Greta Thunberg wakes up in cold sweats thinking about the burr of an ASIC, I got news for you. It's not so bad.
I thought you had her T-shirt.
Me and her are Instagram friends. She DMs me after every show.
Yeah, I would imagine so, yeah.
How dare you?
So
there's a line of how dare you in my DMs.
A report by thestreetgot.com says millennials appear to be the largest asset class yet to emerge in a crowded GBTC trade. So there's going to be a lot of money from, at least it's anticipated,
Is it bad that every time someone says millennials, I think it's someone younger than me, but really it's actually me?
You're smack dab.
I'm right in the middle.
Yeah.
87, yeah.
Yeah. So we have longtime Bitcoin holders are now increasing their position size for the first time this entire bull run.
What's the Give me the
I have
bands,
no stats.
The bands for that. You don't know?
No. It's basically just a one-offs I have
okay.
here.
Okay. So, I don't think HODLWaves or Glassnode has that data. I'm not sure, but I didn't see it there. At least didn't jump out at me. So, okay. Good to know, though.
Canada's leading mortgage broker, Matrix Mortgage Global, now accepts Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, and Bitcoin Cash.
We're still so early, then.
So there you go. So they accept that those coins for their services as of April 9th.
Can we talk briefly about how the ETH heads like can't seem to understand that the only services that take anything besides Bitcoin take Ethereum and also like XRP, Bcash, fucking like you're getting lumped in with garbage. It's time to reevaluate your position here. Like you got to start thinking about what this looks like long term.
So you're not big on say like Bitcoin Cash,
Bitcoin Private, Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin
Diamond.
Black. Yeah, whatever. Like I don't want to get into this again because I could fucking do this every week, but
what we're going to be doing every week.
You have to understand that your coin of choice is being like put into a bag with these other coins because people might have them and want to spend them. It's not because it's a quality coin or whatever. Like everyone either takes Bitcoin or they take, you know, Chuck E. Cheese tokens and God only knows what else, buttons you found by the sewer grate near your neighborhood. Like
it's traded on Binance, there is a market.
Fuck me. Okay.
So anyways, Bitcoin is
I gave up on the swear jar, by the way. You probably tell. Yeah. I don't have not enough money in the
just
world.
Just wait until the Lightning wallet is established. You're going to be dumping Satoshis in there by the bucket
load. I'm ready
load.
To get that going. I do want to.
So am I. Yeah, trust me.
I want to see it.
Anyways, so Bitcoin is now the seventh largest currency in the world. Mm. And right now it's sandwiched between the pound sterling and the Swiss franc.
We're bigger than the pound sterling?
Just smaller than a pound sterling, but larger than the Swiss franc.
Had that backwards.
So if you distribute all the Bitcoin equally in the planet, so you have 21 million Bitcoin and you distribute it evenly amongst the 7 billion or so people in the world, that equates to 0.003 BTC, 0.3%.
30,000 Satoshis or something like that? 3,000 Satoshis? What is
it? It's a million for one, but whatever it is, 0.003 BTC per person. So if you have that number or more in BTC, you basically have more than the average if every person has the equivalent amount of Bitcoin issued to them.
I am enjoying one thing I am liking about the bear market, or the bull market, I should say. Oh my God, how dare I say that other word. The one thing I'm enjoying about the bull market is friends of mine who... You're probably in the same boat too, so I'm probably not alone here. Friends of mine who are like, man, like how much do you have? You've been buying since 2017, and I don't have some huge sum, but I've been consistent.
It adds up.
Yeah.
You buy up a little bit every week.
And that's what I tell them. I say, you don't think that 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks every week is doing anything until a year goes by, and suddenly you got a nice little stack, and you... see the price going up, and then you've also done some research. You're like more invested in it. You have some skin in the game. You're learning, listening to shows like this or shows like Marty and Matt.
There was
a
stat I came up with last week. I think it was if you purchased $3 of BTC a day for the past 3 years, you'd have $300,000 worth of BTC.
I'll tell you, that's not true. It's not true. Because that's
Was it 5 years? Something like that.
Five years.
I put the stat
5 years, probably.
Okay, I put the stat out last year. It was
$3 a day.
Yeah.
Oh, a day.
I don't know, but we got to go back and listen to it.
I got
to
check.
The number is not large. Basically, you put a small amount per day.
Yeah.
And
you're
as long as you're
home.
In a bull market.
Bro, sis, you're staying home. Your coffee money, put it into Bitcoin. Would you buy two coffees a day? Set up two $2 buys on whatever exchange you're using. And
that's
the
metric
grow.
They use. They said instead of buying a $3 coffee every day,
yeah.
Just put that in. And if
why
you
not?
Bought that.
You paying gas, less gas, whatever. Like you're not, your gym membership's frozen. You can't go to bars.
There's lots of opportunity of saving money.
There's never been a better opportunity than now. Again, not to like paint everybody with the same brush, but if you got a little bit extra cash and everyone's got a little bit extra cash, you can't tell me you're not sucking back.
Well, not everybody. There's a lot of people hurting.
Len, you know, everyone is, even the most hurting people are hammering back Skittles and Jewel Pods.
Yeah.
Stop. Put in Bitcoin. Yep. And buy an Apple, man. Better for your teeth.
So I have next 10,000 new Bitcoin ATMs have been installed worldwide in the last year.
Pretty good. I'll never use any of them.
The markup is humongous, but
privacy. Maybe a premium of privacy in the next little while. Who knows, right?
So there's 9 different U.S. Bitcoin ETF applications pending approval. So, and a lot of big names like NYDIG Bitcoin ETF.
Send it.
Galaxy Bitcoin ETF.
When is the ticker SEND coming out?
That's that should be on. Every time I see that, I think of you. So. So
hit me with one more story. Let's do 2 more stories.
I got to
do 2.
I have a few more. There's not too many, but Third Point. Have you heard of them? $17 billion hedge fund. They revealed that they own BTC.
That's a big number, $17 billion.
Another one, $358,000.
Are they American? Wait, are they American? Yeah. Oh, okay. So cool. That's good. That's good exposure. Hedge funds is good exposure.
358,000 BTC were mined. Only 121,000 BTC were transferred to the exchanges. That's in the last year.
Love it.
So
miners are hanging on.
They are big time. So yeah. We have had...
That's so major because they used to have to pay their expenditures, like their CapEx and OpEx was paid in fiat. So that's why you'd expect to see almost every coin mined sent back to exchanges, save for maybe some percentage, right? But if that percentage is shrinking...
Yep.
Oh man!
So BTC, like,
that's
we touched
a major indicator, man.
Oh yeah, if they're hodling, you know, they have their finger on the pulse of what's going on.
For sure,
it makes, you know.
Yeah.
So we have BTC hitting 60K, but can't hold. I'm not sure about now, but we'll touch upon that later on, I guess.
I'll give you a preview. Not there.
Okay.
Last one. Then we go into wallets.
Okay, so we have the U.S. Department of Justice. They want to criminalize BTC mixers.
What else is fuck? We talked about this. Did we not? But the fact, the coin joins?
It's interesting because they have been using BTC mixers themselves. So they want to ban.
Is that
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Give me some color on that.
Well, they've confiscated some BTC from people, and in order to like hide the tracks and where the BTC came from, they use the mixers to do so.
Rules for thee, but not for me.
Yeah.
That's unbelievably bullish on privacy. Like, it's amazing that they're telling you can't use it, and then they're spitting it back to you after a coin join during their sale.
One more thing. Okay. Last one before we go on is Google's IPO is only worth $23 billion at the time. Just give you it.
What's that? 2005?
You know, I don't have the exact year, but...
I'll just
you know what? I don't care. You could take into consideration inflation. There's no way this equals what...
2004.
There's no way this equates to what the 100...
It's pretty close.
No. 4 times?
What do you think it is?
We're talking for inflation since then? No way.
What was the S&P? I mean, we could just look at the S&P on that day.
Go ahead.
See what it was.
No, I don't think it's... Also, it was at a time to what we had Google at 2004 is not the same Google what we have here in 2021. They're a monolith. They're so involved.
$100 in the S&P in 2004 would be 468 now.
So it is a four chain.
It's
okay,
about the same. There it's close. It's close.
So there you go. So Google it and
not a bad. If you're Coinbase, you gotta be feeling pretty good about that comp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll head on to the next topic. Wallets.
The C block.
So basically, wallets are in 2 different categories. You have the hot and the cold wallets.
Yeah.
So hot wallets refer to any cryptocurrency wallet that is connected to the internet, and cold storage or cold wallets refer to cryptocurrency wallets that are not connected to the internet. Generally, cold storage wallets are more secure, but they tend to not accept as many cryptocurrencies as do hot wallets.
Do you want to give an example, like a popular example of each one before you go on?
Actually, I have a list here.
Even better.
So, we'll start with one of the more beginner-friendly ones. It's Exodus. So we'll just start with hot wallets right now.
Okay. Phone apps and laptop apps, more or less, eh?
That's essentially what a hot wallet is, yeah. Right. This is a close source software. Lots of integration with different cryptocurrencies and very beginner-friendly. Next on my list, I have Electrum. It's a hot wallet that dates back to 2011. So it's one of the original wallets. It's very basic, so it's bare bones, their interface. BTC only.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced users, it's recommended. So if you're a beginner, try not to shy away from the Electrum wallet. This is generally considered to have a higher level of security compared to other hot wallets. They lack customer support, and it is open source if that's your thing.
It is. open source so important. Mm. Yeah, you want open source.
So next I have is Mycelium. It's another hot wallet. I've used this in the past. It's pretty good. Open source, only a few coins outside BTC.
Fine for this show.
And I have Wasabi, another hot wallet.
I'm a huge... Go ahead. I want to talk about Wasabi.
Go ahead.
No, you finish yours.
It's open source. Tip. It seems to be more on the complex side for beginners and BTC only. Go ahead, Joey.
I like Wasabi a lot. It's a good wallet. It's... I would say I started using this wallet in 2018 when I was a beginner. It's not that hard. If you're under 50 years old and use a computer for, I don't know, if you can do your banking and check your Gmail and download a torrent.
You're setting the bar really low here.
Gmail, torrent, and
well, torrent banking. Torrent could actually be a little daunting for
you. Like finding a torrent on your computer after you search for the magnet file on the Pirate Bay clone site because the Pirate Bay doesn't work anymore. If you can do that, you can do Wasabi. And on top of that, Wasabi has like a really friendly UI. It's not really that bad. Good security, has mixing on board, which is huge. So if you do want to get deep with the privacy, you can. That was the first mixing I did. I lost a little bit of BTC doing that small amount.
It's always going to be a loss when you're doing a mixing because they have to take something to
exactly,
pay for the service.
Exactly. And so like that's how you kind of cut your teeth, right? And so I remember the first time I did that, I couldn't figure out what happened. And actually Matt Odell and Marty Bent doing their show back in the day, one of the first times I heard about Wasabi was there. After I had already seen it. And so I was able to kind of use that resource and learn how to use it a bit.
Is there any value in using that mixing service when you're buying straight from an exchange like ShakePay or whatever and dumping it right to your wallet? Is there any particular reason why you'd use a mixer in between that?
It covers your tracks.
But it covers your tracks from where you bought it.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Depends. Do you want other people to know where you bought it? ShakePay could presumably isn't even needed here. ShakePay can, and any other exchange can, pin down your hardware wallets after one send.
Okay, I didn't think about that.
Because they know where you sent it.
Right.
Right? So if you have a send to a wallet, presumably it is your wallet. And so when the tax man comes knocking, for example, or wants to talk about gains.
There he goes. I didn't think about this.
I'm not saying to avoid taxes, okay? If there's taxes to be paid, you fucking pay them because those people will stop at nothing to make your life miserable. That aside, if you want privacy, you know, you don't want in the future, let's say, you know, you meet a nice girl and you guys are transacting in Bitcoin. That's a new euphemism for sex, transacting in Bitcoin.
I've never heard that.
So if you're transacting in Bitcoin somewhere down the road, let's say she sends you some BTC or you send her some BTC. Because of the nature of those wallets, if you reuse a wallet, which is another thing you shouldn't do, but let's say you did, they can see everything that's gone in and out. And so you already know, you know, certain exchanges are linked to like Silk Road or gambling sites or porn sites or Coinbase or whatever, right? Like you can see where that stuff goes.
What? A lot of this I never thought of. It's important. It does make sense. You know what? I should have posed this question to our friend Crypto Pablo. he's more into
Monero Stan.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, anyways. So the next
my
list,
favorite country, Monero Stan.
The next list I have here are cold wallets, and I only have three here listed, but I have the Ledger Nano X.
Yeah. That's Ledger, the brand, has a couple of different variants, right?
So I have the Nano S and the Nano X on my list here. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, what the list of wallets I have here, it's not an exhaustive list. It's just a few that I found, and there are a lot more, and they could perhaps be more reputable.
I'll give you one more hot one before you go into your colds.
Please, go ahead.
So, great phone app, by the way, Samurai.
Oh, yeah, I have used that. I don't know why I missed that.
Samurai has probably the slickest interface, for sure. Very easy to use. Very legible. There's no nonsense, no bullshit there. Included Tor connectivity built in.
Good for privacy.
Huge. Yeah. And built-in Whirlpool, which is basically their implementation of a coin join.
Yeah.
And it's an outstanding service. One of their devs follows me on Twitter. I forget who, but that Twitter account, the dev account, and basically anything associated with Samurai is always, always, always responsive to issues. And
so there you go. Customer support.
It's great. It's great. And most importantly, open source.
Yeah.
So there's been some controversy recently in the community about the differences between Samurai and Wasabi. I won't get into them here. It's more, I think, drama and politics than function and form. But it's another good service, man. It's another good service.
Do you have any other hot wallets you want
to... Green Wallet by... No. Yeah, Green Wallet by Blockstream. So Adam Back is a Blockstream guy, Bitcoin OG, cypherpunk from the early days, who's stayed with the project. Highly recommend that one too. That's a like stripped down to the studs as far as functionality. It's send, receive, Lightning, QR, some other stuff, but it's pretty basic.
These are just strictly Bitcoin. I'm not talking about what
this is
Lightning.
This is Bitcoin.
Yeah, so anything to do with Lightning, like the second layer.
It does both. It does both.
But that's what I've focused on this list.
Right. So this, Blockstream is pretty reputable, and they are also releasing a cold wallet. So I'll let you get to that now, and we'll talk about some cold wallets.
So on my next cold wallet, I have the Ledger Nano X. Just want to point out, in 2020 July, there was a serious hack that revealed customers' information such as name, phone numbers, etc.
This is ultimately the problem with hardware wallets, that you have to order it from a vendor. And if you order it to your home, you order it to your place of business, you order it to a friend, girlfriend.
If people could connect dots.
If they get the data, then yeah, you're in that leak or something. You may have a problem down the road, right?
Even with this this hack, it's still very well reviewed. It's the Nano X supports 1,500 cryptocurrencies. It's a closed source wallet, though. That's something you may want to consider. Mm-hmm. There is a fee to buy this particular unit, and it's north of $100. And it has Bluetooth connectivity, although that could be wonky at times, but the option is there. Its smaller brother, the Nano S, is another cold storage.
The older unit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this could be purchased for less than $100. Sometimes you could find it as low as $50 at times. There is no Bluetooth support on this, but it does essentially a lot of the same features the Nano X does. So if you want to get a Ledger, Nano S is a valued wallet to get. Next I have is the Trezor Model T. It's a cold storage wallet, slightly more expensive than the Ledger. A lot more coins are supported. It's open source, and this tends to be more confusing for beginner users. So I would just stress that anybody that does purchase anything on an exchange, be it BTC or whatever, they should really consider getting a wallet. Do not leave any money on the exchange. We've had some exchanges disappear and when that happens, the whatever you had on the exchange is lost. Mt. Gox is one. Quadriga, that was Canadian, gone. And anybody that had anything on either of those exchanges, they're SOL. So it's quite sad. So these are just case in points of why you should not leave your money on an exchange. When it's financially feasible, take your money out or take your coins out, put it in a wallet, whatever wallet you think is best. Do your research. There are lots of wallets out there. Some of them are very reputable, but make sure whatever wallet you choose, do not share any information with anybody. You get your keys, those keys are yours. Do not share with anyone.
Very important private keys.
Right.
Yeah. It's, man, the other thing I would note, you made a point there about a couple of those wallets. The newer models are catering to newer investors, and newer investors want stuff like Bluetooth connectivity and bigger screens and all that. You don't need it. I have a wallet that will connect to my phone. It's never been connected to my phone. It's never going to be connected to my phone. It's never going to be in a spot where, you know, I'm in a public place or even in my neighborhood where like someone can hit me with the Bluetooth attack.
Yeah, you're minimizing the chances of actually having.
Why fuck around with something that works? These wallets go through. Closed source is obviously like the less desirable option in the Nano S's case or Nano X's case. Obviously, that's a bit of a hurdle, but the security that these things have, okay? You know, you got to figure at this point, the Ledger Nano S or X has got to have more than $100 billion in assets across all the platforms. And there hasn't been an attack linked to a fault in the Nano's hardware or software.
Right. It would be somebody actually voluntarily giving up their keys somehow.
That's right. And some of these stories you see about responsible disclosures when it comes to like the hardware being broken, or there's a way to brute force the hardware. Well, it's only if you have access to the thing for some unlimited amount of time. Like, of course, man, anyone can hit you with a $5 wrench and get your coins too, as is a popular circumstance or scenario people talk about in the space. It's up to you to protect yourself from that. And so there's other things you can buy that, you know, you can secure your keys on, for example, or blah, 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 blah.
It's risky to do that.
This is the risk you take in a self-sovereign monetary world.
Do your research. make sure whatever you do, you don't share that information with anybody because they could screw you over.
Yeah.
And yeah, just make sure you do your research. It's very important.
I was going to ask you a question just now, but I'm not going to because it's not.
I think I know where you're going.
OPSEC, very bad.
So there's one last one.
Finish. This is good. We crushed on time, and that was a dense episode.
And the ultimate in the cold storage is...
Oh, here we go.
Just printing it out. You could print out I believe the term brain cold,
wallet.
The cold storage term is essentially they printed out the wallet information and they put it in their freezer and kept it cold. So I think that's where the term started from. So some extreme measures I've heard is when after they printed them, they destroyed the printers. So there's no way to actually get that information.
Yeah.
Somebody could actually just replicate it. So there are some really low-tech options out there depending on whatever one you choose.
There's even low-tech hardware wallets like ColdCard and OpenDime, both by Novak Rodolfo, are slick. Like Pablo's got both. He swears by the ColdCard.
He's a treasure guy too.
He's got a Nano.
Okay.
Yeah, but he likes ColdCard and OpenDimes now. So
I could have swore he had a treasure because he's been talking about that for...
I am half thinking about giving my groomsmen OpenDimes.
That'd be so nice.
It would be cool. Yeah. It would be cool. And I may do it. I may do it. I may say, here, like, you do whatever you want with it. I recommend.
You're not going to load it with 5 Satoshis in each?
I'm going to put something on it. Yeah, obviously.
No more than 5.
Nah, probably $100, whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's it. We're done. Do you want to make any final comments?
Well, on the wallets segment. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Absolutely not. I'm done with that. And just want to touch on the Bitcoiner and the Notecoiner of the week.
Let's do it. I forgot about that segment.
Okay. So, my Bitcoiner of the week is, I'm not sure if you heard of her.
I don't have either because I forgot about this because it wasn't in the notes and I was boiling last night. So you give me yours and we'll talk about them.
So I kind of went off the beaten path here. So Senator Cynthia Loomis, I'm not sure if you heard of her.
Of course. Okay. Yeah, obviously.
66 year old. So she's a boomer. She's a Republican from Wyoming. Mm-hmm. First elected to the Senate in November 2020. She's a former congresswoman. It's through her disclosure, it's been known that she purchased BTC in 2013 on the tip of her son-in-law. So she's a long-term hodler here. She's the first senator to currently own cryptocurrency. Some of her colleagues did own it in the past, but they sold it through disclosure of assets. So she's the only one that currently... Hey,
do you buy that?
It was in the disclosure, so it has to be. Why would she... Why would she disclose false information?
I don't mean her. I mean her colleagues.
I would imagine that they were truthful in their
boating accident.
I don't know.
We joke about this in this.
I'm going to be naive in this.
Okay.
Well, so I'm going to say that. Yeah. So anyway, she was also recently assigned to the banking committee that which is going to be responsible for the CBDC. So the central bank.
Bitcoin. Yeah.
So she's on the committee responsible for that. So that is my Bitcoiner of the week. I think that I'm not sure what impact she's going to have on the banking committee over there, but the fact that she's a senator, a boomer, and she is a hodler of BTC, she's my Bitcoiner of the week.
I like it. It's a good pick. I like Cynthia Loomis. She's proven herself to be more than a fair weather Bitcoiner, which is nice, man. A lot of politicians and even people in the space, especially Wyoming, where Trace Mayer and Caitlin Long were Bitcoin, 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 and then suddenly they were shitcoin, 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 come to us. And it, you know, it was like a sort of sellout job. I think a lot of people took offense to that. And Trace Mayer, you know, who was super visible in the space, both on Twitter, podcasts, conferences, you name it, basically disappeared for 2 years or a year and a half. I haven't heard anything from him in a long time. And he was the OG, right? Goes to show you, man, if you give Bitcoin your support, the community will support you in ways that you cannot imagine. You cannot imagine. So
yeah,
good for her.
It's a very accepting community.
For her.
And on the flip side, so we got somebody that is being shunned away from the community from my Notecoiner of the week, Craig Wright, aka Faketoshi.
Yeah.
So he's made countless...
He may sue you for that, eh?
Perhaps. Let me know if I'm going to cease and desist.
Like, this comes out in 2 days. Let me know if you want me to cut that out.
No, I'll leave it in there. I look forward to the cease and desist. So he's made baseless claims that he is Satoshi. He claims he's the creator of Bitcoin with a group, and he claims that it was a group effort with Hal Finney and Dave Kleeman. Both, unfortunately, have now deceased. So the fact that he's saying that he was working on Bitcoin with those two gentlemen and they're no longer here with us, it's, you know, It's kind of sketchy. This guy is, he is a con man. Recent legal action against Bitcoin Core developers. This is launched by Mr. Wright, Dr. Yeah. Wright. He wants to gain access to the Mt. Gox era wallets containing 110K BTC. He's also the creator of Bitcoin Satoshi Vision.
Unbelievable scam.
This guy's a cancer to the BTC society.
Here's a little bit of an update for you. I thought you would have it. It's from today. Coinbase is leading a legal effort to sue Craig Wright over his copyright claims against the Bitcoin white paper.
Yes. That's
outstanding.
In the, yeah, that's outstanding. It's being, I believe this is being launched in the UK.
It's being litigated overseas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. This is like, again, Crypto Council member Square doing the right thing. Let's hope it
keeps
up.
This is retaliatory because I believe that he launched something and
he sued a few people over the white paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Whatever. Screw you, Craig.
He's a bit of a rat fink, that guy. Like, I don't like him. He did. You should go back and listen to, if you haven't already, when Peter McCormick was relatively new in the space. He does the What Bitcoin Did show. He somehow got Craig Wright on his show. And it is an awkward hour. An awkward hour. Highly recommend listening to it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what episode that was. It was around the same time I got my knee surgery, which was like 3 years ago now, my second knee surgery.
He was more...
Will still crush you in a foot race, listeners. Don't get any ideas. But I had a second surgery.
But at that time, 3 years ago, I don't think his credibility was as shot it is right now. Like, it
can't be. It's only going down.
Right. It's been steadily going down. But yeah. 3 years ago, he might have had some credibility. He might have had some followers that still believe what he's saying to be true.
Mm.
So
maybe.
So that interview, it's dated. I'd like to hear more.
It's ugly. It's ugly.
A lot of dodging questions and dancing around.
Ad hominem attacks against the interviewer, like against Peter. McCormick, this is not a shot at McCormick. Like, he's not that smart a guy, technically. And he knows it. And so he basically sits on this corner of, I'm going to do a podcast with people who are smarter than me and ask, you know, quote unquote, dumb questions and get layman answers. And it's good. He does a good job. I like his show. And this one is no different. He's talking to a guy who claims to be obviously the creator of this, the crypto asset space, basically, with the Bitcoin leading the way, with Bitcoin leading the way. Go figure, man. What do you get? What do you think? Another scammer. Surprise, surprise.
Yep.
What else is new?
And as for the notes, I'm done. Before we disappear, Joey, I'd like to just ask you if you could provide us the price of BTC in US dollars.
$60,134.
Oh, across 60K again. And in Canadian dollars, I have 75,477.
Friends, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. If you would be so kind as to leave a rating, review, share, tell your neighbor, your parents, your friend, your girlfriend, your wife, your brother, your sister, your cousin, aunt, uncle, whoever. It helps get the word about the show out. And don't be shy. Leave us a voice note on Anchor. We'll read your notes. And as always, you can reach out to me at Joey Tweets with 3 E's in tweets on Twitter. And Len is?
The BTC Bot.
Price Bot or Bot?
BTC Bot.
The BTC Bot on Twitter. A lot of automated tweets.
I got to check again.
I'll put it in the show notes. A lot of automated tweets, but you can reach Len there. And
we're on YouTube as well.
YouTube.
If that's your cup of tea going forward, you could feel free to use that.
I'll put it in the Reddit post.
And subscribe over there, ask questions, ask comments.
Yeah, man, like I'll engage with anybody who asks questions. It's the least we could do. First two episodes were, very well reviewed and well received. And
the response has been really good.
Yeah, we've enjoyed it and we want to keep doing it. So 60,200. Good night and God bless.
Take care.